Hello again, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Monday Night Magic. As you may have guessed, this is not Chewy, because Chewy has fallen off the internet, which is really quite sad. This is Clues.
I mean, really, your voice isn't as sultry as his either. Let's be honest. It's more sultry.
Oh, it's more sultry. So this is Clues, filling in for Chewy, and joining me are some, joining me are some distinguished magic personalities. We have Jack, of course, who can't keep a straight face.
You're trying to give me relevancy on anything. That's really awesome, Clues. Thank you.
Yeah, well, anyway, here's Jack. You all know him from his Not Safe for Work website. It's not safe for work in any way whatsoever. And also joining us, someone who did fall off the internet but came right back during the next upkeep. It is everyone's favorite goblin. It is Squee.
I say, good sir, it is absolutely riveting to join you on this night of Monday.
By the
way,
let us
discuss magic.
Yeah, do you all have monocles, perhaps top hats?
Two of them. I am actually cosplaying as Pops from regular show, so we're off to a good start.
All right.
Oh, well, then I'm going to go as Pop Racer, and then I guess that leaves you with which Pops? Choose wisely.
I think I'll be the big head that actually copied him during the really, really real wrestling episode.
Okay.
All right, fantastic. All those references right over my head. Don't watch that show,
sir. Speed Racer, buddy. Now you feel even older.
Yeah.
Hey, Matt, his mouth hasn't caught up to his dialogue yet.
No, my mouth has not been in sync with my dialogue the whole time. You just can't tell because it's...
Thanks to Truncate Silence, every episode is Speed Racer.
You know, I love in honor of Truncate Silence, let's just give 5 seconds of silence.
That was wonderful.
See, that joke's hilarious because we actually did sit there quietly for 5 seconds, but it's all going to go away when we edit this. Anyway, it is Monday night and we need to talk about some magic. And this is episode number 428, or so we're told, unless something terrible has gone wrong with causality, in which case this is episode 863.
Hey guys, it's only a whole lot more episodes until we can reminisce nostalgically about the truncating silence on this episode.
That's right. And hey, since this is episode number 863, how about that new 5-set block structure released 8 times a year?
I mean, I thought it was going to be really expensive at first, but you know what? They actually just take organs now, so it's not so bad.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. You can actually you can get this home machine that removes platelets while you sleep. And
ooh,
it just gives you money. It just puts credits right in your MTGO account. And, then it, crashes.
Yeah, it's still more viable than Bitcoin.
yes. And Dogecoin. So,
whatever happened to that?
Dogecoin? I think it's still happening.
No, I mean, Bitcoin entirely. Didn't it kind of, really hard?
I forget, there was some internet retailer who just started taking it. It was really big news.
I think what happened was it was mentioned too much on Almost Human, and when that show was canceled by Fox by virtue of being on Fox, it just went away.
Hmm.
Oh, well, okay then. Now I know.
Well, we are off to a spectacular start here with...
Speaking of taking your money and your platelets, Star City Games.
So, looking at tournament news this week, there was no GP, at least not one that we're aware of. Are we 100% sure there was no GP? Because we've done this
on the calendar, and they made a reference to there being no GPs because other stuff.
Yeah, we'll get to the other stuff later. Let's start with some Star City Games action. So, Star City Games was in Atlanta this weekend, and they had their usual standard Legacy and simultaneous Modern event on the Sunday. So we got three
events. I wonder how many people had their cars broken into. I have to get it out there, okay? I have to reference it every time we talk about Atlanta.
I suppose you do. Hey, no, actually, here's a digression that's actually topical. Speaking of Atlanta, did you guys hear that Surge is coming back?
Nah. But you know, it's not going to be real Surge.
Gladiator?
Here's the problem. No, it's just not going to be real Surge, though, and that's the problem with that, Clues.
Okay, why is it not going to be real Surge?
All right, so when was the last time you had a can of Surge?
College?
Okay, so it's been probably, 10, 15 years since Surge was a thing?
Yeah, at least that, yeah.
Okay, you have built up and hyped this drink to the moon and back in your head. All right.
No, I haven't.
Okay, well, I believe that with you. All right.
Okay.
But other people who are not, let's say, not as restrained, perhaps.
Sure.
Is that okay if I say that?
Yeah, you're.
They've hyped this drink to the moon and back, and by the time they finally order it through Amazon, like they're intending, they're gonna get it. They're gonna crack it open. They're gonna put in their Rush mixtape on 8-track into their boombox while the Beastie Boys are playing somewhere, and they're working on their Apple II computer, and they're gonna feel like they're back in their, you know, college days. They're gonna take a sip. And it's not going to be the same drink. It's going to taste like garbage, and all of their memories will be ruined. So when you buy a can of Surge, you're not really buying your college memories. You're buying the realization that now you're an adult. Everything has become meaningless up to this point. And you've become so embittered and so enraged, you can no longer recall those fond days that you once had. Welcome to Surge, everybody!
Okay. I agree, Jack. They really should have just bought that free Pepsi. Free Pepsi would have none of these problems, and we'd get Van Halen commercials.
Okay, so what you're saying, Jack, is this is let's imagine that your memories of Surge at this point are as if you're reading the book Old Yeller and you haven't quite gotten to the ending. And by ordering Surge from the internet, bringing it to your home and cracking open a cold can and taking a sip is just like finishing the book.
Pretty much.
Okay. For those of you who don't get that reference, go read the Wikipedia entry for Old Yeller, because I know you're not going to read it. So there you go.
And you can curse and cry in the quietness of your own home and nobody will notice.
Yes, that's right. Weep softly. Anyway, so SCG was totally in Atlanta. We bring up Surge because Surge is Coke, which is Atlanta. It's not just a regional hub for Delta.
And
The Walking Dead.
And Adult Swim.
It's filled with Adult Swim, zombies, and beverages. Also Magic players. So we had a total of 575 folks show up for Standard, and taking it all down was Manuel Orellana. Way to go, Manuel, with Mono Red Rabble. I started to say Robble. No, it's not Robble. It is Rabble. Mono Red Rabble. So the Rabble Master. Totally there. Does this deck look substantially different from the one we saw last week? Anybody?
Don't care.
Not that I could tell from looking at it. It looks pretty red.
It does look pretty red.
It's doing everything that I would expect out of a mono red deck.
Yeah, it sure does.
It's neat. I like it. It's just also nothing new. But hey, this is all going to go away in a week anyway.
I was going to say this deck is going to be so destroyed in it's got one weekend left, right? But there are no events next weekend because it's pre-release.
Yeah.
So this is probably the last time we will talk about the Mono Red Rabble deck here on Monday Night Magic, unless we're talking fondly of things that we missed. So the rest of the top eight, in case you're curious. In second place, we've got Jund Walkers, but in third place and fourth place, we have Jund. So what's
the difference? Bloodbraid Elf. Wait.
I was going to say, what's the difference between Jund Walkers and Jund?
Okay. Jund Walkers,
Walker Density.
Yeah, it's just Walker Density.
I mean, I'm sure they play fundamentally differently when one of them has 8 removal spells and the other one has 13.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
And when you go from 11 Planeswalkers to 8.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's also a lot more creatures in the non-Planeswalker version, so I imagine they play very differently, even if they have similar high ends. I mean, having so many walkers is almost inherently a more controlling strategy, right?
Right.
So,
pretty much.
As opposed to the one which is like, hey, look at that, Polychronos, bam!
I got a big lizard, hey!
Now, this is kind of weird. The fourth place Jund deck, run by Philip Fortner, it's got 12 Planeswalkers, but is just labeled Jund, whereas the second place, run by Gonzalo Velasquez, this one has 11 Walkers, and is called Jund Walkers, so...
Haven't we already established that they're terrible at coming
out
of names?
Yeah, they're just wrong.
Well, here's the thing. The only thing that Philip Fortner's has going for it is it has this extra scavenging ooze in the creatures slot. So because it has a true creature threat, it's no longer Jund Walkers, let's say.
Is that how that works?
That's my assumption.
Okay.
So I got nothing. In fifth place, Naya Aggro. Sixth place, Mono Black Devotion. And seventh place, another Rabble Red deck.
Rabble.
And in eighth place, another mono black deck. So, there you go. This is
sounds all, exhilarating.
All of the deck tech that will do you no good beyond this point.
Yep.
So anything
standard?
I guess anything spicy outside of that in standard?
Not that I saw.
Looks like no. No, there
is. Admittedly, I would put a lot of energy into, you know, fine tuning a format that has a week left. So I don't blame the community.
Precisely.
Yeah, that is perfectly fair. All right. So anything else you want to say about standard? Did anyone watch any of the coverage? Yes, no, no. Who am I kidding? You didn't.
No.
Right? Okay.
Although I was admittedly confused because, looking on the, like the page where they have the bracket breakdown.
Yeah.
The champion that it lists there is not the one that it lists as the number one deck. So maybe they just messed up all around.
Okay.
That's weird.
Tell ya.
Let's go to Legacy, cause
yeah, let's go to Legacy, cause Standard's gonna get you know, all shook up in about 2 weeks, and then it will get interesting. We hope. Boy, do we hope.
I mean, it'll have to. Like, none of these decks are gonna be the same.
Yeah. Although, let's see now, will the mono blue devotion might be mostly, okay. All right, Legacy. Let's talk about Legacy. So on Sunday, we had 263 players show up for Legacy in the city of Atlanta, or I guess outside. Let's be honest, it wasn't downtown, was it?
I don't know.
SCG usually does it just outside of Atlanta, which is usually a better drive. But anyway, I'm sorry, I got off track there. So we had in first place, battling through all those players, Chihoy Yim with Blue, White, Red Miracles, beating out the second place Brad Nelson with Infect. So, wow. I'm going to run down this top eight real quick. And, you know, normally when we get to Legacy, I complain about the diversity when we have too many Delver decks, right? This time around, it's just weird. I don't actually know what happened here. So first place we had Miracles, second place Infect, third place Infect. Now, second and third place were Brad Nelson and Todd Anderson, so I'm not necessarily surprised that those two guys might be running very similar decks. Fourth place Elves, fifth place Shardless Bug, sixth place High Tide, specifically High Tide being run by Feline Longmore, which I've gone on record many times as saying that she's the only person I would like to play High Tide ever. Seventh place, Infect again. And eighth place, Mono Red Burn.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
So there were...
It's interesting to see Burn there.
Yeah, well, I just find it weird to see three Infect decks.
It's part of their Atlanta-themed deck in honor of Walking Dead.
I see.
I'm sure. To be fair, I mean, Infect is a real strategy in Legacy, and every now and then it sweeps in like this. It's kind of like Dredge, right?
Yeah, if you don't have enough creature removal turn one or two, you're in bad shape.
And look at the rest of the top eight. You had Combo Decks, Shardless Bug, which doesn't always pack enough answers in the main board, and Burn. I'm surprised Burn didn't actually place above, Infect, but
yeah,
whatever.
I mean, you know, I suppose, you know, with Burn, most of the time in game one, you ignore their creatures as much as possible and just try and burn their face as quickly as you can.
Yeah.
But if you're playing against Infect, you probably want to go ahead and burn that Infect creature right away.
Yeah. Unless it's got Hexproof, and then what are you going to do realistically?
Yeah, then you got problems. Or they have enough to pump it in response to your burn spell, and yeah, so okay, I don't know. Seems weird. What about outside of the top eight? What do we have? We've got a couple of reanimator decks, we've got, blue-red Delver out in 11th, another Elves, another reanimator, Charbelcher out in 14th, Glass Cannon there, Merfolk in 15th, and another Miracles deck in 16th, so that's...
That is one Delver deck in the top
eight. I was gonna say, that's one proper Delver deck in the top 16. That's crazy.
Huh. Well, this is going to be a good time to buy into it then, since everybody's going to think it's dying. Perfect.
That Legacy is dying?
The Delver's dying.
Ah, yeah, okay. Perfect. Perfect time to pick up your Delvers.
Yep. Perfect time. Hashtag MTG Finance.
How much are those things even worth at this point? They were commons.
Foil ones are still pretty expensive.
Well, foil double face cards are always expensive, because look at them. They're double foil.
They has twice the foil.
Oh. They're gorgeous. Like, this is the time to get your true name Nemesis, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Although
really
I don't...
You're gonna regret having one.
I don't even know what true name Nemesis is at these days.
Last I checked, it was like $25.
Yeah, I gotta say, it looks like about $25. And,
which is still ridiculous.
Your Delvers. How much is a foil Delver? How about that? I actually have no idea. Regular Delvers are like $1.50. Foils are like 18.
I need to find people to buy my regular Delvers because I actually drafted Delver.
Yeah.
Like a lot. Because people don't really fight for them back in Innistrad because they're all just trying to get their Stalker Cleaver nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
But Delver being a human who is occasionally like a flying bug human was pretty sweet. Didn't have to fire that often, but if it went even once, then suddenly they have a very big problem to deal with.
Yeah.
But that was a few years ago. Those were the days. Pepperidge Farm remembers. I think that's it for Legacy, right? I mean.
Yeah, pretty
much.
It's
nice to have a variety here. I mean, there's a lot of infect, but honestly, it's going to be flavor of the week, so.
Yeah, you know, any given week, the meta can be weird. So, there you
maybe
go.
Maybe they were all honestly, just staying and watching the Community Cup or something.
Honestly, before we go on to the Community Cup, that's that's really kind of what turns me off from Legacy is, I feel like Legacy is one of those formats that packs a lot of false promises. And I know that sounds really strange coming from me, especially as somebody that doesn't know a lot about the format, but it changes so often and so swiftly in some cases that I feel like unless you're really watching watching the format, watching the trends, and you're already bought into it, or you purchase a deck and you learn the crap out of it, like Feline Long, and just become the best person at that deck, there's just not really a possibility that you're going to stand a chance at the top tables.
Well, I'm not really sure that's the same lesson that I take away from this. You know, any given week, that can be you at the top tables. If the deck you like or the deck you're good with happens to be the right deck for the meta that week, you've got a chance. I mean, it's not like it's the same deck winning week after week after week. Certainly, there are certain archetypes that over the long term seem to do better than others, but you know, I think the beauty of Legacy is that no matter your playstyle, no matter what deck you like, there is a deck for you somewhere in Legacy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I mean I actually did foray very briefly into the format a while back. I played Ninja Still, if you've heard of that deck, Clues. Mm-hmm. I also tried out Merfolk. I tried Burn, and I tried a deck called the Four Horsemen for a while, which I'm sure you probably also
heard. Oh, yeah. Yeah, certainly heard of that
one. Hey, it had Shroom in it. I had to play it. Okay.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay.
Okay. But, and you're absolutely correct. But there were times I don't know. I feel like I was disadvantaged because even though Legacy is one of those formats that is wide open, and that's what attracted me to it, is it had as many open possibilities and contexts as Commander. It's because it is so wide open, there's going to be a lot of blowouts. And unless you're prepared for those blowouts, I mean, you're going to get crushed.
Yeah. And, you know, certainly I think Legacy suffers more with the 15 card sideboard than formats Standard, right? I mean, there are so many different decks that you're trying to pack heat for that it can just be real hard.
Yeah. And I mean, again, how many times have we seen the week where nobody planned for Dredge to show up?
You know? Right.
How many times have we seen where goblins just sweeps in and wins, or elves, or whatever? And that happens a lot more in Legacy, and I think that is part of the reason that whenever prices begin to drop on staples, you know, people are all too happy to say, oh, the format's dying, yay, finally! Because it does have a bad habit of turning people away from it because of its unpredictability. But in essence, I think that also encourages people to play harder as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how we get started on this, but I felt like talking, so please, somebody else take the mic from me.
No, I think this was a fine exchange. Since we don't have too much more to say about Legacy, I think that was a nice little closing on Legacy. So why don't we turn to the format that I know absolutely nothing about, and that is Modern. The one thing that I do know is that 139 players showed up for Modern, and winning in first place, Aaron Barich with Infect. Because we didn't have enough infect in Legacy. We had to have simultaneous infect over in Modern.
Yep.
Second place, Ad Nauseam. In third, Green Red Tron. followed by Malira Pod Deck, Blue Red White Flash, Mono Red Burn, Tarmo Twin, and Blue White Red Control, rounding out the top eight.
That is eight different decks.
That is eight different decks for Modern. So I guess something's going right in Modern. Let's see how long until we repeat a deck. How about that?
Okay.
Ninth place Scapeshift, 10th place Black White Zombies, 11th place Merfolk, 12th place Scapeshift. So top 11 decks, all different.
Yep.
And Affinity, kind of the boogeyman for Modern in some respects. Affinity not showing up until 15th place.
Huh.
I mean, we've had weeks when you have like three Affinity decks in the top eight. So it can be beaten. I'm guessing that everybody in the top eight was packing, answers for artifacts. You know, as if there aren't any, you know.
I mean, Affinity's like the call in from a shoebox deck, right? That was such a weird analogy. I mean, phone it in. That's what I was thinking of and my brain got crosswired, but Affinity is definitely the call in deck, I think, of almost any format. I mean, it's not really a deck you have to think very hard on. And I know the Affinity players, well, see, and I know people are going to go ahead and try to defend it. But the most intense decisions I think you're ever really going to have are, you know, when to use your Shrapnel Blast if you're running that, knowing when to actually play your draw, knowing when to drop the Aetherium Master, things like that. I don't think it's nearly as complicated as people make it out to be. But I don't think aggro decks are complicated, so I'm biased.
Well, I also don't think it's as easy as some people make it out to be. You know, there's a subset of decks that I describe as being easy to pilot, difficult to pilot well. And yeah. I would even put like a mono red burn deck in this category. It's easy to just hand a person a mono red burn deck and go, the point of this deck is to burn your opponent's face, go. And anybody can do okay with it. To do well enough to actually make top eight with it takes a lot of practice and understanding when to do what. So, you know, I would put Affinity in that bucket. I think that's kind of a fair thing. I mean, your goal is to have a dude with a cranial plating and punch them in the face. That's it. We can just, you know, do that in a sentence.
Yeah, and it's definitely one of the most linear aggro decks out there, I think, because, you know, hey, drop dudes, swing, when you run out of cards in your hand, draw cards.
Yeah, now, you know, the modern version is a little more complicated than, I think, than the legacy version that I run, which is the Tezzeret Affinity. Because in modern, you're really leaning heavily on Arcbound Ravagers and, you know, knowing when to eat artifacts, can be tricky.
Like in real life.
Yes, just like in real life. But, you know, I think in Soul Artifact really gave some fuel to the modern versions of Affinity, so.
Yeah, it gave them a beater because they're always going to have artifacts. And sometimes that beater is indestructible or flying.
I was going to say, in particular, you've got that Darksteel Citadel. That you're handing,
you know, you get a lot more value out of the Ornithopter, which previously just sat there.
Yeah, that's true. Previously, it just made your cranial plating bigger. Now it's actually a 5/5 beater.
Yeah. Now, be fair, gentlemen. Sometimes it activated metal. What is it? Metalcraft.
Metalcraft.
Yeah, there we go. That's the mechanic I was thinking of.
You mean the one that's actually in the deck? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. This modern Affinity list that's in 15th place, I do not believe that the word Affinity appears on a single card in this deck.
It does not. I already looked. I was looking on behalf of Chewy, who isn't here to do this.
Yeah, he's not here to complain about it. So, okay, this week we shall call it Metalcraft. Metalcraft in 15th place.
I would have also accepted Modular.
Well, Modular does appear more than Affinity, but does it appear more than Metalcraft? I don't think so.
No, it's Metalcraft.
Yeah. Alright, so, nice diverse metagame for Modern this week as well. So, I feel like the numbers for attendance were a bit low this time around.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong, but...
No, they're a bit low. I think it's probably just a combination of things like format fatigue, mm-hmm. and in general, it's the end of the summer.
Right.
People might actually want to go do something before they immediately subscribe to the next set.
Yeah, for that matter, we're into the school year for anyone who's still doing that sort of thing, so.
College restarted.
Yeah. All right, and that was the Star City event this weekend. I don't remember any other interesting news coming out of it that I recall.
Nothing I've heard of.
All right, great. So there you go. No GPs to talk about, but we do need to at least briefly talk about the Community Cup, because that happened this weekend.
It did.
So the community team came to take on members of Wizards R&D. Is it all R&D folks that were on the Wizards team? Let's see.
I think it's just people who work there in general qualify.
Yeah, definitely, because I see Ellen Bergeau is on the team, yeah. And she is not R&D. She's awesome, but she's not R&D.
And Worth is on there to skew the shuffler.
Right, right.
Did
so,
it actually crash on them during this weekend? Did it come out?
I do not believe so, but I'm pretty sure we would have heard about it if it did, because there's an entire fleet of people just waiting for that, and they're all on Twitter, and don't shut up.
So, the community team came in, and they were victorious over...
It was actually fairly close, though, to be completely serious.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just personally, and I'm sure I speak on the behalf of you gentlemen as well, I want to give a big shout-out to the Community Cup members that went in there and, you know, cleaned house. They did an exceptional job. And, you know, it's funny, there were some people in the Community Cup this time around I know, and I dare say I'm friends with, and I wanted to see what they were up to. And so I paid attention this time. For the first time in literal years, I watched the Community Cup instead of just assuming we were going to win like we always do.
Mm-hmm.
And the Iron Root Chef Challenge was hilarious. Like, you know, screw everything else, screw Vintage Masters, screw all the other stuff. But the Iron Root Chef Challenge was really, really cool, and it made me wish that there was a tournament set up somewhere that I could attend that was set up that way. So that
okay, so why don't you tell us more about the Iron Root Chef? How did that work?
Okay, I don't know the exact rules off the top of my head, because I've had very little sleep. But essentially what happened is before the tournament started, each participant, including R&D and our side, were given a slip of paper that had some kind of stipulation on it. And uh-huh. The point was trying to have a deck that was extremely flavorful while being competitive. Like, Scotty Max was Magic editor.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to have a deck that had no more than 60 words in the titles of the cards. And if a word was repeated, it counted. So, like, if he had 17 mountains, that was the word used 17 times and something like that. And he actually did fairly well, as did Erin Campbell of the Deck Thieves fame, and she did pretty good as well. And they managed to make up for their results from the Vintage Masters event. So they did really, really well. And again, you know, I'm super, super proud of everybody that participated. I didn't follow it as much as I wish I had, simply because I don't really care about Vintage Masters that much or the other stuff that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
But something that I thought was also really cool is, you know, afterwards they had karaoke night, and it was cool to see like R&D actually being people and enjoying themselves rather than being these faces that I see on the mothership. So that was cool. It was definitely interesting, only because I knew people on there. I'll probably go right back to ignoring it again next year. But you know, I like seeing creative challenges come out of the R&D team, because it reminds me that they enjoy this game as much as we do.
Mm-hmm.
And despite all the complaints you hear out of the community, you know, they genuinely want to provide an experience that is positive and proactive in keeping people in the game. So, you know, good show, everybody. I enjoyed it.
All right. So, and I assume that we're going to see coverage up on an archive here in the next few days.
Probably.
So it's generally confusing when you look over the deck list that they posted when they don't actually tell you what the stipulations were with each deck list. That just seems like an oversight, because you're looking at them, they're just like a bunch of random cards unless you can directly see what the condition was from them, and a lot of times you can't.
You have
to open a separate page to see what their stipulations were.
Yeah, and that is very, very bad, like, website flow, and it completely detracts away from what the Iron Root Chef Challenge was supposed to be. So, yeah, Wizards, I'm glad you had fun at karaoke night, but hire a better editor. I'm kind of available. I can do this for you. And I'll organize the deck list. Yeah, yeah. I mean, hey, if Wizards wanted to offer me a job for whatever lapse of complete certainty that they had, I would definitely take them up on it. Not really. I wouldn't do that. I'd miss you guys.
We'd miss you too, Jack.
Most days, right?
Mondays.
Oh, okay. Only on Mondays. Gotcha.
Wow, it looks like I'm looking at the Iron Root Chef rounds, and it looks like the community just crushed it.
So my understanding is that the community went for powerful cards that were kind of flavorful, and the Wizards team went for very flavorful cards that also got run over by better cards. Is that accurate, Jack?
Yeah. Actually, yeah. Like, I'm not saying that the people who design this game don't necessarily have a good grasp on, like, you know, how to build a competitive deck. But as is often the case with the Community Cup, what we see out of them is usually, you know, hey guys, we're gonna have fun! And then the community's like, well, our definition of fun is actually better.
Well, no, the community is like, if we screw this up, everyone is mad at us.
Oh yeah, like immediately
we have like actual stuff on the line.
Yeah, like immediately after it was declared that the community won, like snap, 5 seconds later on Twitter, somebody was like, shout out to Conley Woods for being on the only team that ever lost to Wizards R&D.
And I was just like, John Lauk's getting so much crap for being the first person to lose on both sides. And it's really not fair to him. But
no, not at all.
Like that was just the, I remember him getting a lot of crap, and it was largely from Marshall because they're friends and they can do that. But like the year that he was on the community side, that was the only year they lost. And then immediately he gets hired by WotC and he goes over to the other side and the community just rallies and defeats them on the other end. Whereas Ryan Spain is the only person who's won on both sides. So fun for that. Strange trivia. But yeah, so we won and that means we got something.
Yay. And by we, I mean not actually us.
People who signed into Magic Online over the weekend got something.
That's right. Those folks did. And I did not sign into Magic Online over the weekend.
That's understandable.
All right. So, hey, while we're on Magic Online, do we want to jump to this later a little bit?
Makes sense to me.
All right. So while we're here, how to state this? So there has been a lot of talk over the years about the issues with Magic Online. Now, I for one have not really jumped on the MTGO sucks bandwagon, partially because I don't really play much MTGO. You know, I've toyed with it here and there, but you know, I could count the number of games that I've played on MTGO. Let's see, is that right? A number of matches on one hand. No, two hands. I've got to go to two hands now. But still, I have not played with MTGO all that much, and I never used the old client. I've only ever used the new, what's I guess called the version 4 client, what we used to know as the wide beta.
Yeah, the version 4 client.
So I can't really compare, you know, I don't have a long baseline for my thoughts on Magic Online, but I know that making a good, robust program is not as easy as a lot of people want to make it out to be, but at the same time, they've had 15 years of doing this? No, 10 years. Just to celebrate its 10-year anniversary, right?
Yeah.
That's right. So they've had 10 years of doing this. There are a lot of complaints about MTGO. And just, I think just today, an article came out on the Meadery, and we'll have a link to that, that lays out some really logical complaints about how MTGO, let's call it, fails to function.
Well, in the case of this article in particular, it's focusing less on the client itself and more on the way that WotC compensates you in the event that the client fails.
Yeah.
Which is a policy thing rather than a system thing. I mean, in a perfect world, the system will always work and these policies don't have to exist. The fact of the matter is right now, a disproportionate number of people are having serious problems staying on Magic Online. Like, it's actually kicking them from events or disconnecting them or having connectivity problems across the board. And it's directly impacting their ability to actually play the game. And that means that as more people get kicked from live events that are going on, they're actually encountering the policies that are in place for compensation on a much higher rate than before. Or at least that's the implication. I don't actually know the numbers. But essentially the way that Wizards handles compensation is if you're in an event and for whatever reason you can't properly participate, you put in a ticket that says, hey, I got booted out of this draft and I couldn't actually pick the cards that went in my deck, so how can I possibly do anything with this? Or I got disconnected and I timed out trying to reconnect because your system doesn't work. And if they review it and they don't think that you're exploiting it or whatever, then they will refund you. And you just get the compensation for that. Now, if it's in a bigger event, let's say instead of playing like a very short 3-hour draft or whatever, and instead it's like, you know, a 10-hour Magic Online major tournament, and you're playing through one of those and you're doing really, really well. Like, let's say it's a crazy, like, you know, 6-round tournament or something, and 4 rounds in, you're undefeated. And then you go in to round 5 and you submit your deck or whatever after sideboarding, and it just completely kicks you out. Like, it drops you from the event. Not just you disconnected and reconnect, but you're just out. You're done. Well, with the record that you have there, you get X number of packs depending on the event. And if the number of packs that it would give you for losing out at that point, just on your rating, is higher than what the general compensation for the event is, they just give you that and that's it. Like, you don't get compensated for the packs that you could have won. You don't get compensated for the, you know, essentially the time that you put in. It just treats it as if you had lost those events. And that rubs a lot of people the wrong way, because packs on Magic Online are not actually worth all that much. They're worth less than the, you know, cost of physical packs by a bit. And you lose all of your time and your momentum, and it's over something you have absolutely no control over.
Yeah.
And a lot of the frustration, like I said, is that this is happening with a greater frequency now than it was before. And people are just getting tired of it. And this is also a point in time when there actually are things that are considered competition to Magic Online going on. And whether or not you think programs like Hearthstone count for that, is up to you. But the fact is, people are going to other games and they're finding that this actually is just like a, for the most part, a Magic Online problem. This is not normal for the industry. Like, there are other games that you can play online, which admittedly are vastly less complicated because they don't have the massive infrastructure behind all this. But nonetheless, they could go play some other game and it doesn't crash and give them this feel bad thing. And being Magic players, they're very vocal about it, and they're posting articles, they're posting on Twitter. Some people are saying they're quitting or liquidating their collections or so on and so forth. And that's your catch up on how we are with that.
Yeah, and you know, I think that that's fair to say. We're living now in 2014. Having a product, having a server or a service that stays up is not all that unreasonable. I mean, don't get me wrong. I agree that Magic has a lot of moving parts. Magic has a lot of cards, a lot of different rules. Having cards or rules that don't interact well or don't interact properly is one thing. And believe me, MTGO has its fair share of those, because there's pretty much not a big tournament that goes by where I don't have a player who objects to a ruling and says, well, that's not how it works in MTGO. Well, that's fine, but MTG only mostly gets it right. But I mean, here we're talking about something different. Here we're talking about just the fundamental of doesn't crash, right?
Yeah, we're talking about we want it to function and keep functioning. And in the case of the article that you're mentioning here that's linked in the show notes, it's specifically acknowledging that, you know, there will be times, even under a good client, where things just happen, like servers burp and you get disconnected and you can't get back in and you're out of the event. And the question is, what is Wizard's responsibility at that point? I mean, are they supposed to compensate you for things that you could have won? Are they supposed to give you entry into another event, like, free of charge just to offset it? Like, what can they do to fix it? Because right now, just being given what you would have gotten if you had just lost feels really bad.
It does.
So, and yeah. That's it. It's an ongoing discussion.
I don't think it's just necessarily the client itself. I think it's probably also policy. And as you gentlemen have stated, you know, it's 2014. Users are used to stable software with whatever hardware they're working at this point. And if that's being spoiled to having operating systems that work fluidly regardless of what the program is and if it has cross-platform viability or whatever, what we're really encountering here is, you know, if the client worked, nobody would notice how bad the policy is. Let's be completely honest, okay? But the client doesn't. It's garbage in most cases. And like, I'm in very much the same boat you are, Clues. I played very little MTGO. I did it for Pauper for a couple of months, last year before the client update. And there's been a couple of times I've thought about returning to it because it seems like it would be fun. But I just, and you know, Twitter and social networking being what it is, you're always going to hear an aggregate number of cases where people are vocally complaining over things that are actually good, because that's the fun thing to do, right? Is kick whatever is around. But just the things I've heard, not even people getting shut out of a game and only getting compensated what they should have got or something like that, just being an unpleasant user experience, like that completely turns me away from the client. I don't think that necessarily Hearthstone and other services play into it as much as people think. Hearthstone has, granted, a much more fluid and simple user interface probably, and it's also much easier experience to work with. because it's probably stable. But, you know, Hearthstone also, that's a different kind of game. I guess it's the easiest way to say. You have cards in this game where you have to select a card out of all the almost 20,000 cards that are available. And sometimes that causes bugs with ladder trees and logic trees and things like that. Just the rudimentary things I know about programming. Look, Magic does have a lot of cogs. And it's not just like big cogs. They all fit together. It's a big cog, then a bunch of little tiny cogs, then some cogs that aren't shaped exactly right, but they kind of work with this other cog. And sometimes bugs are going to happen. Even if this program was completely stable at this point, you would still have instances where things got broken because the game is very complicated. And that is a difficult concept to translate onto paper, translate onto the internet. So I think really what we need to look at here, first of all, is definitely MTGO needs a lot of work. But instead of complaining about it, as a community, we should be doing the proactive thing. And yeah, we should raise awareness when something bad happens, but raise awareness at the right people. You know, getting on Twitter and complaining about things, it solves absolutely nothing. And it doesn't just go for MTGO. This goes for absolutely anything that happens in this community. It doesn't matter how vocal you're going to get on something about on Twitter or how often you're going to complain about it on a blog or an article or whatever. Unless that has traction and teeth and can latch on to somebody that can do something about it, everything you're doing is completely worthless.
Yeah, I mean, I know that when I first tried out the client, I did the first squee draft on the new one, and I recorded what I saw, and I also submitted something directly to Worth, which was, you know, here are some of my suggestions on making the interface better. And I got a real human reply to it, and then later, after the next patch had gone out, he said, so did we resolve your problems? Like, I actually got a follow-up. And that was helpful, and that's what you need to do.
Yeah, and that's really, really cool because, as I'm sure you gentlemen can attest, how often do you get that kind of, like, interaction with a support team on software?
Ever? Not very.
Yeah, I mean try
dealing
with...
work.
Yeah, they absolutely do. I mean, again, Wizards, I have faith that they want this game to be a good experience for people because they love it and they want us to love it. And I think that translates very well into wherever the game is at. But I mean, you know, try dealing with Microsoft corporate on an issue with their software. Try dealing with Macintosh corporate on something going on with their software. You are extremely lucky if you get to deal with somebody that knows what's going on and might care about your problem within a span of 8 hours on the phone. Okay. We are at a level as a community to where even though we're huge, we're small enough to where we really can make this thing work. So talk to people about it. Talk to the people that matter about this. If you're going to tweet directly at them and try to use as little profanity as possible. I know that's weird coming from me, but still.
Like, yeah, be professional about it.
Yeah, actively. Because look, Bill, like, you actually put in a legitimate complaint directly to somebody that mattered, and you got a response, and then he followed up with you! How rare is that in the software world? Again, like, we really can make this client good. You just have to do the right thing about it. You can't just get on Twitter and yell at the top of your lungs. I do that. Leave it to me.
Yeah, we got a guy for that. It's Jack.
Yeah.
He's on it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll post porn while complaining about the client for you. I can do that, and I can be hired
like
for as little
as the internet at once.
Yeah, like, I mean, I try to maximize all the things. So, Watsy, again, you can hire me for $15 an hour. I will work for you.
One other thing just to note when you're seeing these flames getting fanned pretty hard on Twitter, keep in mind that some of the people that are the biggest critics of this actually have financial incentives for something else to be more successful in Magic Online. Just pay attention to who's actually saying these things and their cheerleaders. I'm not saying that, you know, it's a sabotage thing, but just pay attention to who's actually talking. Because a lot of the times you're like, oh, wait, you're that guy. You kind of own that. Check. Because that also happens. Try to be constructive, pay attention to the message, and acknowledge the fact that some things, even though it feels like it should have already been fixed by now, they take time. That said, if you are not enjoying Magic Online, yeah, stop playing for a while. There are plenty of other things to do, and honestly, don't do something you hate.
Yeah, I think that's good advice. And they'll notice, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the other way you can send them the message. I mean, I'm not saying, like, make a big, fancy, this is why I'm not playing post every 5 minutes, especially if you keep playing and you keep making that post, because then it's really obvious. But in general, like, you know, say, hey, I'm going to take a break till they fix the client. And that's it. Like, don't make a giant fuss out of it. Just acknowledge that that's the problem. And then be willing to come back later if, you know, you miss Magic Online and they fixed it.
Be ambassadors and not fanboys.
We have enough of both. But we could use more ambassadors.
Well, I mean, we need a lot more ambassadors, but the point I'm trying to make is, like, you know, if you love something, be willing to work with it. That is the main byline of loving anything, okay? Don't love something to death. And I think that is part of the problem that a lot of people have with MTGO as well. It's like, we love this game intensely, and we love it so much that we fly into a blind rage whenever something doesn't work the way we need it to, because we want our fix. Like, let's just be completely honest.
Yeah, and I think that Jack hit on something really important, and then we'll table this and go on to something else. But I think that Jack hit on something really important. If you have a legitimate complaint, an actual problem with something, and this is actually bigger advice than just for MTGO, you will get a lot more response and a lot more traction out of giving a well-reasoned, well-worded, and specific complaint to the right person rather than just going, this sucks. Right.
Yes.
You can shout MTGO sucks all you want online, and that's not really helpful. You can send an email directly to Wizards customer support and tell them MTGO sucks, you should fix it. But that's not really helpful.
Why does it suck? In the folder with all the other people saying that and never read your email.
That's right. We've got a billion of those. Why not, you know, if you tell them this is what went wrong, here's where the problem was, that's something they can actually go and look for, that they can try and fix. But anyway, that's probably enough yelling about MTGO. Let's move on to happier thoughts. For instance, next weekend is the pre-release for Khans of Tarkir, which means, as of now, the full Khans of Tarkir set has been completely previewed, spoiled. How do you want to... Yep.
The card image gallery contains every card.
That's right.
Right.
It is all up now. So if you were curious as to what cards would be in the set, now you know. And we're not going to go through all of them because that's not, nope. This is not that kind of show.
That said, I am happy to see Arc Lightning because I had no idea.
Oh, and they put Arc Lightning in there. In here. That's nice.
Yeah, it's nice to see Arc Lightning. And I have been told, but I haven't actually looked over the list yet, but apparently like a Loxodon or someone wandered into this block.
Really?
Yeah, I'm looking for it now because, like, if that actually happened, I'm really impressed and confused.
Huh.
Just imagine, like, the lone elephant man just chilling.
Yeah, Woolly Loxodon. There he is.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know how he got here, but how's it going, buddy?
He's an elephant warrior.
Yeah,
wow.
There he is. You're right. Yeah, a Loxodon just wandered in to this block.
I would like to say, I'm really glad that all it took for us to fall in love with Kamigawa was a name change and a new coat of paint. Like, I mean, because in all seriousness, like, let's think about this logically. You had Kamigawa, which was, in all fairness, it had its problems, but Kamigawa was a cool block, all right?
And I think it was the precursor.
Yeah.
I think it was the precursor to the Innistrads and all these other, like, setting theme things.
Yeah. And, you know, it was a block that I got to experience, belatedly, but it was one that I still had fun with, and there's the junk cards in there that I'm still finding ways to break. Khans is the inverse of that. It's both very flavorful, beautiful, because the art is gorgeous. Again, my hat's off to the arts department. But it's also incredibly strong. Like, I mean, there are commons, uncommons, and rares, and mythics, and everything at every single level that I'm like, I want to build a deck with this. The Sultai Broodleader especially, I like that card. I think that card opens up a lot of dredge possibilities in Commander, and that makes me very excited as always. But you know, Abzan is very, very strong and limited apparently according to Scotty Mac, so that makes me happy. We know who the real Wu-Tang Clan is. And yeah, like, there's just so many cards in this block, or this set, I should say, excuse me, that look fun. And it's not even that they're good, it's that they look like something I really want to play with. So I'm excited for Khans. I don't know about you guys.
Oh, definitely. Definitely excited.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I've had a lot of fun just looking at the art again. The art's beautiful, as it has been for most of the sets recently, but I've been especially enjoying this one. And I'm also really enjoying, like, the random cards that are, like, they're flavorful, but I'm like, that's really a card? Like, Ride Down, which is just the red-white card that's essentially, hey, that guy, I run over him with my horse. And that's all there is to it. You're destroying the blocking creature, and you gain trample because you just ran over him. And the picture has got this guy who's getting run over by a horse from his point of view, and the flavor text even says, I will wash you from my hooves, which is both a Mardu taunt and the title of an upcoming episode of My Little Pony Friendship is Magic.
aren't you clever? Well, one that I especially like is actually the Abzan Elephant that costs 4 and deals 3, makes the opponent lose 3 life and gains you 3 life, I believe. I like that card a lot because similar to other cards in this set, there's quite a few things here that have multiple layers of interaction depending on where you go. Like that card is obviously going to be very good in standard. Imagine blinking that thing out repeatedly with Deadeye Navigator though. Does that not just seem fun?
There's all kinds of fun to be had here. That's so pretty.
Well, I specifically want to give a shout out to Ponyback Brigade.
Yes, that's a good one too.
Cause it's goblins riding a pony.
It is awesome.
It's also 5 power spread across 3 different bodies for 6 mana. No, 4 different bodies.
Ankle Shanker is legitimately the only card I've ever read, and I looked at, and then I looked at the art, and I laughed. Like, I, even though we've covered that card already, that card just keeps making me chuckle every time I look at it.
I'm really enjoying this puke a bunch of goblins out theme they've got going on with Goblin Slide, too.
Yeah.
It's just great. It's just like goblins are running all over the place, you know, like in real mainland Asia. Awesome.
So yes, much cool indeed. Stuff. Anyway, full set's out now online, so you can check it out. The pre-release is of course this coming weekend, so definitely find your local shop, find a pre-release event, and go check out the cards. I'm sure it's going to be fun.
Enjoy the fact that you don't have to pick the promo you want and can actually just play.
Yes. Yes. So speaking of which, since we're on that subject, I guess, some more details have emerged about how the pre-release is going to work. So, of course, as Squee said, you know, you're going to have some randomness to what your promo card is, because we're going to have the boxes again, right? And I've gone on record as registering my complaints about the boxes. I'm not going to say that they're a terrible idea. I feel that they're... You guys remember the controversy a while back when on Sesame Street, Cookie Monster actually said that cookies are a sometimes food?
Heretic, but yes.
Yeah, I know. It's just wrong, but I think that advice actually fits here, that the boxes are a sometimes thing, in my opinion. But it looks like they're here to stay. They're definitely here for cons. But in cons, it's not just going to be 5 boxes, 5 rares or mythics that you can get, you know, 5 promos that you can get. There'll be 8 promos per clan, so when you get a box, you're not sure which one you're going to get. So that's nice. I think we all like that. Other things that we have learned about what they're going to have, of course, we've got a how to phrase this. I don't want to call it a gimmick, because that's a little unfair. But we've got a theme. We're gonna have an activity that's going to try and unify you with your clan. So much in the same way that back in the RTR block, we tried to get you into, your guild and to try and identify with your guild more. We had the maze running. I know some shops didn't even bother doing the maze running. Well,
Our maze running was awesome.
Yeah, see, we did the maze run and it was actually kind of fun. People kind of enjoyed that.
We did. I think the people who first completed the maze were Orsov and Boros at our store. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, the first thing, like, we had a guy who dressed in Orsov attire. And the first thing he said as soon as the Orsov reached the maze was, well, with enough money, God, and power, we can do anything. Merca! So then immediately the whole shop burst into song. You know, naturally.
Right. Like you do. Right.
Right.
So this time around, there are going to be 5 banners, 1 for each of the clans that will be hanging up in your shop. And inside of your pre-release box is a sticker, because everybody loves stickers, and anyone who says otherwise is just wrong, because everybody loves stickers. So, when you win a match, I think it's a match, or yeah, I think the way it's going to work is when you win a match. You get to sign your sticker and put your sticker on your banner. So by the end of the night, you can just look up at the banner and see which clan has more stickers, to figure out, who has brought glory to their clan and who is.
This is so much less violent than I imagined for the Mardu there.
Yeah, indeed. It is. There's no setting on fire or,
No head collecting. Oh, trophy collecting, excuse me. We can't say
trophy. That. Yes.
Acquisitions.
Right.
No, that's the Dimir.
Yeah.
The who? I don't know who you're talking about.
Neither do I. It just suddenly appeared in my head.
And there it went.
We will, of course, also have in the box will be, spin down life counter, because everybody loves spin down life counters. I know I do. As well as an achievement card for your clan. So there's stuff you can do, that you can check off. I'm not really sure exactly what happens when you complete the achievement card.
You learn kung fu.
I think you feel better. I don't know. I don't think anything has ever really mattered with those since, like, way back when you popped open the Hell Vault.
Oh, I see.
You give yourself a tiny pat on the back.
I see. I'm sorry. Like, I'm wrong about what lets you put the sticker on the banner.
Oh.
It's completing your achievement card that lets you put the sticker on the banner.
Complete
it's not seven of your
achievements. You don't have to get all of them.
Okay. So, all right. All right. I misspoke. My apologies. So the chivos are important. So actually, don't just throw away your achievement card, or don't just leave it on the table. Speaking of which, look, you're going to a pre-release. Don't just leave crap on the table. How about that? Just pick up after yourself, right? It's an evening of...
The local game store owner has to clean that up. I mean, really?
Yeah, it's an evening of fun and picking up after yourself. Not both. Not just, it's both, not just one. Okay, so go ahead, clean up your mess. Anyway, Chivo cards, get them filled out, get your stickers, put your stickers on the banners. Fight for your clan. It'll be awesome.
Yeah.
Now, there's another link that we have in the show notes on this subject, and let me bring it up here. There's a post over on MTG Salvation where folks have done Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. Let's call it some informed speculation on...
Completely scientific research backed by nothing.
Exactly. have done
so
some speculation.
It's a Discovery Channel special, then.
Yes.
Bullets and beards all the way.
Most of the History Channel these days. They've done some speculation on what the rares will be in the pre-release packs. So
far as they have looked at all of the rares in the set that have symbols on them and went with those.
Yeah.
Which is skewing things because, like, Sultai has more than others by a bit, which is also weird. Yeah, all we really know definitively is that if you happen to get that 1/8 that is the mythic, it is the leader of that con.
Yeah, so you do have a chance at your con. But it's only a chance, you are not guaranteed your con in your pre-release pack.
It is not a big enough chance to sway, just go with the playstyle that you want to play.
That's right, Mardu. Go with Mardu.
Abzan, actually.
I'm going with Mardu on this one, actually.
Yeah, there we go.
Personally, just because my three favorite archetypes in Limited are red-white and red-black and white-black, so, hey.
Let's just combine them all. Ta-da.
I like it when I can make things not in the way as I hit with the things, so. It's a true Boros way of life.
Yeah. So, anything else we want to say about the pre-release other than folks should go?
Have fun, and, you know, those clan tattoos will be with you long after this pre-release, so despite what the Mardu might want you to do, don't do that.
This is actually really good advice.
Yeah, the only other advice I have for the pre-release is that for some of you, this will be the first time you've encountered Morph. So really don't forget that anytime your face down creature is going somewhere else, even if it's just returning to your hand, you have to show them that card.
This is very, very good advice.
They're not running this at competitive, so you're probably not going to get like game loss burned for it, but you need to get in that habit now. Because if you play at any higher level event, you will lose games for it. And this includes when the game is over and everyone's like, yay, we're done. Don't just pick up all your cards. You have
That's
to prove
right.
it.
You absolutely positively must show that that thing that's morphed could have been morphed. I know you may not want to, but you totally have to. You are required to. This is not optional.
And you'll probably remember it for the end of the game, but when the blue deck bounces your guy or puts them on top of your library or whatever, you still have to remember to show it.
Yes.
So.
And speaking of which, they are going to have, I hesitate to call them tokens, but in the token slot in your packs, you may get a card that is a 2/2 morph creature with no abilities. And the idea is that this is a reminder card that when you have a card face down that has been morphed, you can put this on top of it to show what it is. That is not really a token. You don't create a morph token. That card is morphed. This is just a reminder of what it is. Okay.
It is a reminder that it's a 2/2 colorless, nameless, typeless, everything else-less creature.
That's right. It has no colors. It has no types. It is creature 2/2. That's it. It's everything you need to know about that morph thing.
I recommend you take a Sharpie and you write your own flavor text on it, though, because that'll be fun.
Which, by the way, this right here, what you guys are going to experience when you see your first morph creatures. This is exactly why judges always harass you when you're using like a face down card as a token or using an empty sleeve face down as a token, because a face down card in Magic means something. It means that thing is a morph creature. So don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, especially now. Like, yeah, you should never have done that, but now that's actually like, no, do not do that. There are morph creatures. If you just are like, oh, well, this is my 1/1 goblin token, and you just grab a card you're not using and put it face down. No, do not do that. Bad times will be had by all.
Exactly. But yeah, Squee is totally right. Absolutely reveal your morph creatures at the end of the game. At competitive REL, this will earn you game loss, game losses as it happens. So just don't do it. Always reveal it and you'll be fine. You'll be fine.
For once, it's actually okay to be the guy that still had all D's.
Yes, that's true. This is one of the few times ever that at the end of your game, we actually want you to show something to your opponent. You should still sign that match slip and give it to us, but then carry on.
Yep.
All right, so there, the PSA section of the show is now out of the way. So, Jack, here's one that's totally up your alley. Looks like the commander has had a banned list update.
Oh, goodness grief. Okay, so I am definitely not angry enough to actually talk about this because I've calmed down since, but essentially what happened is Sheldon and company decided that they were going to integrate the two separate ban lists of banned as commander and banned period into one because it was confusing, which seems very strange when both of those were fairly obvious and you could keep them divided. And any person that had any kind of intuition whatsoever, even like a person who's new to commander, if you sat down and actually explained it to them and said, you know, you can't play this as your head guy, they were cool with that. After the, other than that though, they have banned Braids. They have banned, not Illidomri, Rothellos, Lord, from Commander as well, entirely. And they've unbanned Cocoa Puffs entirely, and they unbanned Metalworker. Now the only important things to really draw away from the banning itself, Braids was cool. It was a great supplemental strategy to stacks, but there are plenty of other cards you can actually use, such as the Abyss, Magus of the Abyss, things of that nature to just make your opponents unhappy. Smokestack is another popular favorite. Rothellos going away is something that's been coming for a long time, because even though Rothellos is actually quite a good card, and as something that was not a commander, he was still fun enough to where you could actually do a lot of cool things with. He did make the game unfair because he did actually allow for some turn, I think, 3 or 4 Tooth and Nails with monogreen builds, which is something that should not happen. Cocoa Puffs getting unbanned. Look, it's been long enough to where there are more powerful cards than Cocoa Puffs. I would actually argue that Grey Merchant is stronger than Cocoa Puffs in certain circumstances.
Okay? And for those of you who don't speak Magic the Gathering cereal, that is Kokosho the Evening Star.
Yeah, like, sorry about that. I'm really tired, and like I said, I'm not angry enough to really talk about this. About the only thing I would take away as being extremely controversial from this unbanning would be Metalworker getting unbanned. Now, originally when Metalworker was unbanned, I immediately started smiling and I tried to find a foil one as cheap as I possibly could online. Because it's going to go directly into Shroom, it's going to go directly into Bosch, it's going to go into Arkham Daxon. It's one of those cards that you are absolutely going to want to play in artifact-based strategies, which are extremely popular in this format. However, it's very awkward that they banned Rothellos because of degenerate mana shenanigans and unbanned Metalworker. Because this is the format of zero mana rocks, of zero costing mana rocks that tap for two. Or one costing mana rocks that tap for two as well. Like, Metalworker is one of those cards that, you know, in Magical Christmas Land in Shroom, okay, I'm gonna cast Metalworker on turn 2 and then play Karn turn 3 and immediately start exiling your lands.
Well, hang on. Let's back up for a minute for those playing along at home who may not be familiar with either of these cards. Okay. So, Rothellos, Llanowar Emissary, who has been banned as of this Commander banned list update. He costs 2 green. He's a 2/1 legendary creature elf druid, in fact. He has an ability that says tap. Add green to your mana pool for each forest you control. So he is definitely mana ramping like you wouldn't believe in the right deck. Then we have Metalworker, who costs 3 colorless, so a little easier to cast even though he costs more. He is a 1/2 artifact creature construct. He has an ability that says tap, reveal any number of artifact cards in your hand, add 2 colorless to your mana pool for each card revealed this way. Okay, so with that out of the way, go.
Okay, so it's really awkward that they ban Raphelos and unban Metalworker, because the arguments that can be made against Raphelos is that it's very easy to get a lot of forest out very quickly, and that he can equate to degenerate mana shenanigans. I mean, I personally have tapped Raphelos for 10 mana on turn 4, because that is a thing that can happen with God Hands and Commander, where you get Azusa out on turn 1, okay? But with that being said, I mean, Metalworker is really just as bad, and the fact that my first immediate thought was, oh my gosh, I can't wait to do degenerate crap with this, says quite a lot about the card. And even though the fair arguments that are made against Metalworker is that it's slightly more delicate, because all artifact removal is going to hit it, and any kind of mass removal is going to hit it, you know, there's a lot of kill spells that hit only creatures in Commander as well, and that all apply to Raphelos as well. I'm happy about the Metalworker unbanning, only because it's going to make any of the artifact-based decks I played, Bosh, like Shroom, extremely powerful until Sheldon and company actually get their stuff together and ban it again this following year.
I think it was only unbanned because it's not legendary, so it can't be a commander. And maybe they're like, that's good enough, but as they realize the power of tutoring artifacts, it's gonna go back to being banned.
There are so many ways to grab artifacts in this format, because they are the lifeblood of what makes a commander deck work. And I'm not even joking about that. Like, I have spent 5 years trying to make my Shroom deck as competitive as humanly possible, because it's just a card I fell in love with, and I wanted to do that. That's like my thing in Magic. And being able to tutor for Metalworker on turn 1, and then, like I said, start playing Karn, start playing Salvaging Station, start playing cards that actually shape how the game is going to go for me, that's every bit as bad as being able to play Tooth and Nail. That's every bit as bad as being able to play whatever big green fatty I was going to nail out of my hand with Raphelos. Both of these are cards that are bad because they create degenerate mana situations fairly early on. And that is ultimately what hurts this format more than anything else. It's not necessarily the combo decks being able to beat out all the other strategies. It's not necessarily the lockdown decks like everybody thinks they are. It's mana, okay? And it's a format where you can get mana very easily. You can put out a lot of lands fairly quickly because these cards are available to you and they are perfectly legal. And so if we're going to ban anything, we should actually start looking at fast mana cards. The French reserve list actually, or the French ban list, I should say, for 1v1 Commander, it tackles this fairly well. It bans things like Sol Ring, Mana Crypt, and things of that nature that actually allow you to get a lot of this mana out early. And the closest thing I can think of equating 1v1 Commander to is actually a lot like Vintage. And I mean that with a positive moniker around it. Like, it is definitely a more pure form of competition, I think, but it's not always necessarily fun. So if the rules committee is going to start making bannings like this, they really need to decide between practicality and acquiring more people into this very popular format that allegedly anybody can leap into, and, you know, fun. Like, if we want to have this big monster truck format, like, make it a monster truck format. Unban all the things that allow for degenerate mana situations. But if we're actually going to make this format something and make people take it seriously, we need to sit down and really worry about how bad that early mana acquisition really is. I mean, I might not necessarily like it, especially with my Judge Foil Mana Crypts and things that I have. But for the good of the format and for the format to blossom, that's really what Sheldon and the other folks need to sit down and address. That's just what's really the problem with this format.
So, Jack,
mm-hmm.
You didn't mention it before, but how do you feel about Arayo being banned?
I've literally seen that card played once, and that person got ganged up on because of politics. So I can't really give you a good opinion
I could understand that.
That.
I mean, for those of you not familiar with it, Arayo, Suratami Ascendant, is the 1 in a blue, 1/1 flyer who, when the fourth spell of a turn is played, you flip it, because it's an actual flip card. And when she flips around, essentially you have this legendary enchantment, which is a lot harder to deal with than a creature. And it counters the first spell played by each opponent each turn, effectively just shutting the game down.
Yeah, like, here's something else, like, and I'm sure you guys have familiarity with this, since, as far as I know, both of you play Commander to some extent.
Yeah.
There's the degenerate decks that exist, like Arroyo, Suratami Ascendant, where all they do is they are based around making the game as unfun for people as humanly possible. For me, that was actually Arkham Daxon, River Shore Room, if you can believe that. Arkham Daxon, I built it once, and our game lasted 4 hours, and my friends politely asked me to never bring that deck again. Like, cards like that, when they get banned, I don't even care, because there's so few players that actually build those decks and try to make something out of them.
Yeah, I had that problem with Moat.
Yeah, like...
Moat's just one of those things where if your deck isn't equipped to deal with it, which admittedly at this point it probably should be, but if it's not, you're just done, and that's miserable.
Yeah, like, anything that slows down the game to that point, there's so few players that actually tracks, and I am saying this as somebody that has played Fog religiously in Standard when it was possible. Those cards don't really have much of an audience. But things like I keep wanting to say Eladomri, Raphelos and Metalworker, those are much more attractive to people. And again, that deals with what I personally feel is the main problem of the format. It's fast mana. It's not anything else. It's not these shifting ideas of what the Sparta Commander really is, because that doesn't exist. That's subjective. It's fast mana. That is the problem with this format, and if we're gonna decry anything, we should ban all the cards that allow for fast mana degeneration. Like, Azusa. Azusa is actually really freaking ridiculous. I don't know if you guys have ever had to play against an Azusa deck. Have you?
No.
Perchance? I have not. Okay. I have built Azusa several times over the last couple of years, and I'm a person that if I have the cards, I build the most competitive commander deck that I possibly can. Because they're there. Why not? Right? And getting Azusa out on turns 1 through 3, especially if you have to hard cast her for on turn 3 like that, she's ridiculous. And like, when I loaned people my Azusa deck to play, the only thing I ever told them was, the moment you have 3 mana player, and you're going to win. And they did, every single time, because of mana. And so that's really what's going on with this format. And so we need to create a ban list that reflects that.
I believe that. All of the miserable commander game experiences I've ever had have entailed either someone doing something absurd before everyone else has finished developing, or games going really long and someone just actually having to X out a player. And in either case, it's because big mana. So.
Yeah, like, that's really what's going on. And if we're going to do that, unban Shahrazard for crying out loud. Okay, that's my soapbox moment for the week. Thank you.
I like how you ended that on a controversial statement that no one will support. Good job.
Nice.
I mean,
there.
I try. You know, I have to actually try and keep my most hated mana magic moniker sometimes.
I gotta defend it.
All right.
Giant bell to the death.
So that is the Commander Band List update. In other news, hey, do you guys like holidays?
I do.
Do you like boxes?
All the time.
Do you like gifts?
Yeah, I do.
Do you like holiday gift boxes?
Whoa, slow down.
It's filled with clothes. Slow down. It's filled with clothes. Just tell me it's filled with clothes and we can both walk away.
I am expecting a box with Tarkir underwear. Is that what
socks.
I'm getting?
Socks. It's actually socks.
Loincloth?
They don't wear socks in Tarkir.
Specifically, it is Sultai socks.
Ooh, I don't know what those are, but that sounds terrifying.
Yeah, so the news is that the holiday gift box for the year has been announced as a surprise to no one. It is a Khans of Tarkir themed holiday gift box. And these are nice boxes. I've gotten the last two. I actually like the boxes for storage and organizing.
I like the Elspeth box.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah, that one's definitely nice. But each gift box comes not with it's not filled with cards. That's not the way this works, but you get the nice box. Inside are 4 Khans of Tarkir booster packs. Inside are some Khans of Tarkir basic lands, which, by the way, the basic lands for Khans of Tarkir are gorgeous. Dividers.
This set is gorgeous, period.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Dividers, stickers for organizing those dividers, you know, labeling them, because everyone loves stickers. We talked about this earlier. And it comes with a special foil promo card, and that is Sultai Charm. And it is alternate art. So I believe this will be the only place to get this particular alternate art of Sultai Charm.
That would be my assumption.
It looks pretty awesome too.
Yeah. Yeah, and the nice thing about the holiday boxes is they're really easy to find.
Oh yeah.
You are not going to have to get on a list or anything for this one. I know that they continue to have the Elspeth holiday boxes at my local Target. They probably still have them now, honestly. They hang on to them for a while. You can get them at MSRP, no real fight.
Which
they're
is $20 by the way.
Too. Yeah, it's $20. I actually used them for their intended gift purchase by, you know, you're essentially getting four packs at MSRP and then $4 for a really nice box, which is pretty much worth it, especially to someone who's just getting into the game and doesn't have anything to keep their stuff in.
Yeah.
And this is like half the cost of a fat pack. So it's a pretty easy buy because it feels bigger too. I mean, it's a much larger box than the fat pack. So that's pretty nice.
Plus, you know, if you're one of those very nostalgic people, you could like cut out the dividers in it and put a little scrapbook in it of you and your LGS and take the worst photos possible.
Aww.
Aww.
All right. Yeah. So wild speculation time for next year. So the first holiday gift box was from RTR and it was blue. Had a nice blue color theme. Last year's was from Theros Block and was green, was the primary color of the box. This year, it's red. Tons of Tarkir and it's red. So red. Next year, is it going to be white or black?
It'll be blue again. They know their audience.
I'm saying white or black because I think we're going to go through another bout where we have good guy block, bad guy block. And especially with Ugin returning, I think there's some potential for the Eldrazi to resurge, so it would, you know, it'd be cool to have a bad guy block again.
Honestly, I would have expected the holiday gift box to be white the first time, just because snow.
Right.
But maybe if we're bad next year and we continue to complain about Magic Online non-constructively, they'll decide that we only get coal and we get the black box instead.
No. You'll get a black box that's like really shoddily put together, and then you'll open it and it'll be Homelands.
You take that back.
Okay, I'm going to predict that not only will it be black, but there will be a special black on black version that you can only get at San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah, and when you pull the cards out of it, you have to hold them up to the light at a certain angle and squint really hard.
That's right.
I told you how much those Garrickaxes were at Dragon Con, right?
Yes.
I don't want to know.
It's a lot. Here's a hint. If you were to have real money from Monopoly, you could not buy it with the biggest bill.
Oh.
Yeah,
no. Makes me really sad.
Yeah, that's very sad. But yeah, anyway. One other note for the holiday boxes, just in case you're wondering and you've never bought one before. All of the stuff that says holiday gift box and all of that is on the sleeve that comes off of it. You're just left with the pretty sweet art box. So it doesn't look like it's, Elspeth with a Christmas candy cane or something. No, it's just the nice art when you're done with that.
Right. That is a good point. So if your parents want to know what to get you for Christmas, just say, Dad, just give me the holiday gift box and we'll be done with it. That's what I'm going to say.
That works.
So, all right. So, the next thing that we have to talk about here in the show notes, I'm not going to spend a ton of time on because it only directly affects a small group of our listeners. It may indirectly affect a lot more of our listeners. So we talked a little while back, a few shows back, about how, judge foils are going away at GPs. So, judges at GPs used to get, and currently still do, but it's going away before the end of the year, currently still do get a selection of judge foils from the judge program as a thank you for judging. Okay, it's not really compensation, it's just a thank you, but over the years it has come to be viewed as compensation by the judges. It's part of the reason that they judge, right? I mean, when someone judges, they are sacrificing their time, they are sacrificing their money to come and judge an event, mostly so that, you know, they can deal with all the trash that you guys have left on tables. Seriously, stop leaving trash. And one of the things they got was these judge foils. But those are going away, so now, in order to compensate the judges, it is entirely on the tournament organizer. Because TOs actually run the events. It is not Wizards running GPs. It's certain TOs that Wizards lets run GPs. So we have now seen the compensation for the first event that's going to be run under the new non-foil method. And that's coming from Legion Events. And so we'll have a link in the show notes if you want to go look at it. I don't want to talk about the specific payouts all that much. Except to say, if you actually crunch the numbers and you run the math, level ones are going to be compensated a lot less than they used to be. Level twos are going to be compensated a little bit less than they used to be. And levels three and above are going to be, I'd say it's about the same, give or take. But what it really boils down to is that if you're judging and you're flying to an event to judge, you are not coming out ahead ever. Maybe at level three and above, you might be able to pull that off. But below that, not as such. Which, you know, is is the case for some events anyway. I mean, bear in mind, no judge ever was doing this to get rich. We do this because we enjoy giving back to the game. But at the same time, if I'm looking at laying out a bunch of my own money to get to an event, put myself up at the event, feed myself while at the event, and I'm coming home from a whole weekend of working, sometimes working really long hours, and I'm paying lots of money to do that, the number of GPs I'm traveling to is going to go way down. So, the reason this will indirectly affect a lot of you is this is going to change the staffing pool. The number of people who apply for any given event, I think, is going to be taken from a much smaller geographic region than it used to be. Now, on the one hand, I guess that's maybe good that you're going to have local judges, but on the other hand, the pool of available judges is going to be smaller, in my opinion. I'm not saying that the levels of compensation that Legion has proposed here, they're not unfair in any way. I'm just laying out the realities. You know, it's going to be tougher to convince a judge to fly from across the country or, you know, somewhere from the other side of the world. We often have foreign judges who come over and judge events in the U.S. I think that's going to be a lot tougher thing to swing for judges going forward. So it's going to be interesting. I guess that's really all I want to say about it. I don't know if you guys have any comments.
Well, it says on the link here that it's upping the price of the event for players too.
Oh, hey, good point. Yeah, I completely forgot about that. Yeah.
They're going to care about that.
Yeah, they will totally care about that bit. I'm sorry. I was thinking about this only from a judge perspective. Yeah. Hey, by the way, GPs are going to get more expensive.
Which is inevitable.
It was inevitable. I mean, if you think about it, you know, GPs have been roughly the same price for, what, 8 years now?
I assume. I have not been going to GPs for very long.
The point is multiple years.
Yeah.
You know, the cost of everything else goes up, but the price of the GP must stay the same is basically what it boils down to. And I can already hear you out there yelling at your... I hear you, Steve. I know what you're saying.
I see you, Steve. I see what you're saying.
Squee tells me. So, look, if the extra, and in this case, I think the way Legion is doing it, if you sign up for the event ahead of time, it will cost you $50. Okay, so if you pay, if you look in the comments at the bottom of this article, normally I say don't read the comments, but in the comments, if you pay 3 to 4 weeks ahead of time, so if you pre-reg early enough, it's going to cost you $50 for the GP. If you do it 2 weeks out, it's $55 for the GP. And if you do it the week or the day of or day before, it's going to be $60. So it's going to be a sliding scale, right? So I guess plan ahead is what it goes to. This is incentivizing players to plan ahead. And if players plan ahead, that lets the TO plan ahead so they know how many people are actually going to be there, which is a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, this is actually a very practical thing. It's not just a matter of punishing people who are late, because if they have a good idea of how many judges they need, then they don't get too many judges and pay too many people. So it's very directly business.
Yeah.
So just pay attention for that. You should probably be planning these things in advance anyway, because if you're traveling... you've got to make travel arrangements. If it's just like the down the street GP and you end up paying $60 instead of $50, let's again be real. How much money do you spend on Magic? The extra $10 is not going to kill you, and it's actually ensuring that a judge is not completely hosed out of their day. So we will deal with it.
So there you go.
Yeah, and let's be honest too, Magic players are notoriously bad at planning events. So if you're going to do a GP in the next month, you should have planned a year ago.
Yeah, or at least a couple of months ago. You know, I'll give you, okay, yeah, I didn't know exactly when I was going to go, you know, let's say 3 months. How about 3 months? Can we do that?
Hmm.
No? No, we can't? Okay.
I mean, as someone who goes to conventions all the time, I plan most of mine well in advance, and I just assume other people do that, but apparently they don't. So, plan ahead. It'll be good for you. This is coming from a red creature. Think about that. It's weird.
All right, so this next, and I think this is our last real item in the yep. in the show notes this week. There is a link, and I've not followed this link because I was told. So it's labeled in our show notes the following way: best PTQ winning sealed deck ever. Way more important than big tourneys. Don't look at it until we're live for maximum jam potential. So I'm gonna follow this link,
okay,
and I'm gonna see what I think of this deck. So this is a PTQ winning sealed
yes.
deck, is what you're telling me.
Yep, won a PTQ in Germany over the weekend.
Okay,
I want you to just look over it and tell me when you realize what this deck does.
The artwork is, I mean, the pick is a little bit small, so I'm having trouble making out all of the cards, but I see here, two sliver hives.
Yes.
I see here, three of the pain lands. Mm-hmm. We've got black, green, and white. Let's see here. What else have we got? We've got at least one sliver here. Is that two sliver hive lords?
I believe it is, sir.
Huh. Okay.
Believe the dream. Slivers can be a deck. At least for the next week.
Like, oh, no, all this isn't sealed.
Oh.
Yeah, this is a sealed deck.
Not being this in the show notes actually hurt me once.
Two sliver hive lords with two sliver hives and a constricting sliver, and who cares what's in the rest of the deck? Because really, who cares? I mean, there are other slivers in the deck, which is good too, but who cares?
Now, the only thing that concerns me is, looking at the deck, I think the only way they have to make the other two colors, because it's black, green, white, and then the three pain lands, the only way they have to make those other two colors are two of the pain lands. Do sliver hives make colors?
For slivers, I think they do. Am I misremembering?
I don't know. Let's go find out.
I've opened one ever.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to actually play with sliver hive. Sliver hive. Goodness. Yeah.
Yep.
Add one color to your mana pool, spend this mana only to cast a sliver spell. So, okay. So yeah, there's plenty of fixing here. Good God, how did you get this deck?
That's amazing to me. Because, like, aside from all the obviousness of the greatness going on here, the ability to have multiple sliver hives out with a constricting sliver is disgusting.
Yes.
It's utterly disgusting. They just don't get creatures anymore. And yeah, it won the PTQ in Germany. This was posted by Kai. I'm pretty sure Kai's not lying to us. That's
and,
amazing.
And the angel that's over there on the far right, is that the angel that resets your life total, or is that the one that's power and toughness are equal to the number of creatures you control?
I'm pretty sure that's the Resolute. So yeah, that's the life 21.
Wow.
Yep, and just hiding down there in the bottom corner as the sixth rare from these six packs is Ingeric's Wake, because why not?
Yeah, looking at the art, that is totally Resolute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, bam, all six rares in play, including your two Wooburg Mythics. That's just amazing.
Wow.
And, you know, some Verdant Havens down there just to smooth out that mana a little bit. It's great. So,
I had
to share that with everyone.
I think that's spectacular. Absolutely spectacular.
And I think that's it.
All right, yeah. Have we got any other parting shots here for the evening, gentlemen?
I do have a really quick, funny story, actually, that happened to me this week.
Sure, hit us up.
Okay, so it's a little serious, but then it gets funny, I promise. So my dad is a guy that throughout his life, he's kind of used humor to cope with the different situations that have happened to him. And so dad's kind of learned to laugh at everything as he's gotten older, and especially like he's 54 now. And he's just at the point now where sometimes he does talk about, like, you know, passing on and things like that. And usually when dad gets into these discussions, it's, oh, we're all going to go to the funeral. The body's not going to be there. We're all going to get drunk and have a good time. And I want you to tell every embarrassing story you have about me. And I'm just like, yeah, dad, you know, and I roll my eyes and kind of go on. But, this week we were actually talking about it and joking about it. And I just kind of randomly mentioned, nah, man, I'm going to give you a Viking funeral. Like, we're going to build you a wooden, like, little thing, and we're going to light it on fire, and we're going to push you out into the ocean. And that's going to be it. And he sat there and he really thought about it for a minute. And then he started to smile. And the problem with this is dad is also one of these people that when it comes to humor, if the punchline takes 10, 20, you know, 30 years to finally become a parent, dad'll still do the joke. Like, that's his approach to practical jokes. And so dad was like, well, that's a really good idea. I think that's actually what I want. And I was like, oh yeah, ha ha ha. Yeah, right. And so later in the week, he brought it up again. And I was just like, well, dad, you know, I was just kidding, you know, like we always do. He was like, no, like, this is a real thing I want to have happen. And he had a serious expression on. I was like, no, dude, you've got to be joking. Like, really, like, you've got to be kidding. And dad this last week actually went and did all the research on how Vikings actually set their warriors off to be burned, you know, on their little pyres or whatever. And now dad wants cremated and pushed out into the ocean, dressed in a Viking costume. and I didn't believe him at first on this. And then Dad brought out the will and showed me where this was his last wishes. Nice. So yeah, unless something changes, this is a thing my father wants done. As one last good joke before he parts the mortal coil, and I thought I would share that with you guys.
All right. Well, I for one think that's awesome.
Yeah. Dad's pretty cool like that. He's had a lot of things happen to him in his life, and having extended practical jokes, I believe is the best way to describe that, is really how he's kind of taken to, dealing with life. And I laughed, and then I scratched my head on how many permits I was actually going to need to make this happen. But
oh,
yeah,
quite a few.
So,
quite a few. Now tell me straight, yeah. Are you actually going to go to the ocean, or are you just going to crash the neighbor's pool and really wake him up in the middle of the night?
Actually, there's a river right near my father's house that leads out, kind of through the community. So his idea was that we would light this thing on fire, push it into the river, and it would just be like this ongoing bonfire that kind of binded down the river. And I pointed out the obvious fire hazards with this because, as we're in North Carolina, you guys know all about kudzu and where it likes to grow. Yep. And especially, you know, the timeliness with which this might happen. So Dad realized that was probably a bad idea, and he has settled for Oak Island, North Carolina, to be his final place of parting before he goes to Valhalla.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's one word for it.
So does this mean you're taking up archery, Jack?
Apparently.
Excellent.
All right. Well, I actually used to be an archery instructor, so
yeah, Clues has burned bodies before. This will be awesome.
Well, that's technically not what I said, but technically. But yeah, I can totally help you out.
Sweet.
So this will be a thing then.
I'm not saying I'm looking forward to when your dad dies, but I mean, what a way to go.
I mean, yeah, like seriously, and this totally beats having the body posed in different places around the wake, which was his original idea. Like, he has a very
like, what, did he just watch, like, Weekend at Bernie's, and he's like, that is me, or, like, I don't understand.
Well, there was an old movie star, I forgot who it was, I think it was either Earl Flynn or somebody else, but, when he died, his best friend got up and gave this very passionate speech about how they, had been boyhood friends, and, you know, yada, yada, yada. And then when the guy got home, there was the actor sitting in the guy's sofa with a drink in his hand. And so, like, it started off as he discovered that, and it morphed into all these different concepts, and now he's actually wrote it into his will that he wants a Viking funeral.
Nice.
And, yeah, so, yeah, that's my dad, everybody.
I really want a RoboCop myself.
Well, what would Android you be like, though? Like,
probably be just, like, normal me, but with a gun.
I just mentally imagined you like trying to make dinner and just you're like, oh god, I just want to make a sandwich, come on.
Yeah, that's probably a bad idea. Maybe I should not go with the RoboCop approach.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to find the scenario where if zombies happen, I can at least fight them off as also a zombie, but like a zombie for good.
Hmm.
So you're Korlash, like that's what we're looking at here ultimately.
You know, I had never really considered RoboCop as zombie, but...
Well, I mean, he's from Detroit, so he's like a terrible zombie, but, I mean, you know, that's how it happens.
I mean, he's from Detroit, so his life is already miserable regardless, but, you know.
I mean, no one really cared about him before he died. They don't say Murphy, they say RoboCop. Think about that.
You know,
would you buy that for a dollar? I think you would.
Like, now that I think about it, RoboCop ultimately could have been, like, the worst comedy ever, too. Because, like, you have the awkward, stuttering nerd that makes the police force. And then he's all popular, so it could be this great, like, coming-of-age story.
Yeah, you went Dragon Ball Evolution with that. That's terrible.
Like I've ever had a good idea with fiction. Let's be honest.
Robots and zombies.
All right. Shall we put this to bed?
Yes, yeah, let's do that.
All right, I think that's probably a good idea. Okay, so...
I'll get the pillow.
Thank you.
All right, so any parting thoughts, contact information, anything you want to throw out there, Squee?
Sure, you can follow me on Twitter, at SqueeGoblinNabob. There's no I in Goblin. And I'm probably going to be sending Chewy another draft video soon for themanipool.com. And I guess I told him I would mention it. He actually put up another episode of the Vegas... So it's only like, you know, 15 months late, but hey, he's trying and he's got to get this out of the way before whatever next Vegas may happen anyway. But no, he's doing that. I know that he wanted to mention it when he would have been on tonight, but he couldn't. Other than that, I'm really entertained by the fact that there's a sealed PTQ 1 week after the launch party in Greensboro at Lucky's. And I love going to sealed PTQs as soon as possible in the format because we haven't had enough time to either have it on Magic Online or grind it out. So having like 2 weeks of playing with these things and then immediately going into like a high stakes event just sounds like a lot of fun to me. So I'm going to be doing that. And if you happen to be in that part of North Carolina and want to go, you should do that too.
Well, all right then. All right. How about you, Jack?
You can always reach me on Twitter at Jack LaCroix. You can also read my extremely not safe for work blog where I will answer anything. I cannot emphasize this enough. I will answer anything you throw at me in my ask box at jackfromnc.tumblr.com. And I'm going to be sending Chewy some love notes very shortly. He never responds to them. He was going to put it up on the Manipole, but then he decided not to. So I don't know what that was, but there you go. And Clues, what are you going to be sending to Chewy, and from where?
I'm going to be sending Chewy a big box of internets, because he has none. His internets are all broken.
Is he just going to, like, open it, and millions of cats will flood out of it uncontrollably?
If you've actually integrated over the entire internet to see what's there, cats will be part of it. A lot of it we just can't talk about on Monday Night Magic because that's not what this kind of show is. The internet's a scary and dangerous place is what I'm saying.
Stop all the downloading.
Or I may just order him a big box of Surge from Amazon and just send that on over.
Can just be disappointed. There we go.
Yeah, it's just a big box of disappointment. Anyway, speaking of Chewy, before I talk about myself, Chewy could not be here, but he is, of course, the ringleader of all of this chaos. You can find him on The Mana Pool. Seriously, just go to Google, type in The Mana Pool, and by my count, the first, like, 5 hits are all him, because it's themanapool.com, The Mana Pool's RSS feed, The Mana Pool Kickstarter, The Mana Pool Facebook, and then The Mana Pool on Twitter. And Mana Pool, yep. The Lunchbox, Mana Pool, The Flamethrower. The kids love that one.
The Broadway musical.
That's right. And so go ahead and check all that stuff out. If you want to find me, you can, of course, find me pretty much every week on the Card Advantage podcast here on the MTGCast network. You can follow me on Twitter. I am at LockLuze, spelled just like it is in the show notes. And in just a few weeks, I will be down at GP Orlando. So if you're going to be down there, say hi. I will be the one wearing a black shirt. No, not that one. The other one. But they will totally know where I am. Just say, hey, where's Clues? And actually, they'll have no idea where I am. But, you know, maybe it'll be me. Who knows? So there you go. This has been episode number, what did we decide? 428 of Monday Night Magic. Thank you all very much for listening. And go play some Magic. Like at a pre-release, for instance. Just,
yeah,
you know. Off the top of my head.
Put those morphs.